This first photo that you're about to see in a few moments was taken by a viewer named Jane. Jane had met a man named Jeremy off a dating app. She hadn't been on any dating apps since her at the time recent breakup, and she thought it was finally fine to get back into the dating scene. After swiping away on some dating app and conversing with a few people, she matched Jeremy, who seemed to be the kind of guy she would feel comfortable with and connect with. Jane describes herself as a good-looking but shy and reserved girl, and she described Jeremy as an above-average-looking guy with a buzz cut who was exactly her type. He had a full tattoo sleeve on his left arm and had mostly pictures of himself outdoors. Most notably, his first picture was of him leaning on his pickup truck with his dog in the bed of the truck and the woods in the background. The two struck up a conversation about his dog and then dogs in general, and eventually the conversation segued to local bars that the two would frequent. Jeremy picked up Jane, and the two ended up going to a bar called Lansdowne Street, and in her words, kind of hitting it off. Jeremy dropped off Jane at home, but beforehand he seemed a bit reluctant, wanting their little date to continue, even at one point implying that she should go back to his place with him. She politely rejected him, and that was the end of their first date. The two would text back and forth the next few days, and saw each other again the following Friday, where they went out to get fast food and ice cream. After chatting in Jeremy's car driving around for a bit, he ended up taking them to his house, where he started trying to get her to come into his house. She rejected this request over and over until it got creepy, and then he started getting a bit physical. Jane said she didn't know if he was trying to physically remove her from the car or if it was him trying to make some kind of physical advance on her. Either way, she shoved his arms off of her and left the car, walking quickly down the street. Jeremy called her a few times, but she ignored him and kept walking. She had her older brother Chris come pick her up. Shockingly, after a long back and forth over text, Jeremy cursed Jane out, but then minutes later switched his tone to apologetic and regretful. Jane blocked his number, figuring he was not what he initially seemed and he might be crazy. Now this is when the photo that I mentioned earlier comes into play. That night, Jane was awoken to a sound outside her window. It was the sound of the recycling bin full of glass and cans on the side of the house being kicked. It was late at night, so this was cause for alarm. She got out of the bed to look out her bedroom window. Upon lifting up the blind and looking around outside for just a second, she saw something that made her stomach churn. In this picture that she took, you see Jeremy standing in the darkness with his hood over his head, facing the window. She managed to not scream and be brave enough to take this picture when she saw him out there. Jeremy tried opening the window when he was seen and started yelling Jane's name repeatedly. Jane screamed for her brothers and her dad to help, and by this point Jeremy had taken off. According to Jane, the whole block had to hear his 8-cylinder pickup truck flooring it down the street. Tempted to text Jeremy threats of calling the police, she showed restraint and brought the info to the police the next day and filed for a restraining order using the text and pictures as proof of reason. She sent a photo of the restraining order to Jeremy, which went unresponded to because she never unblocked him. What Jeremy planned to do at Jane's window is not exactly clear, but even if it wasn't to break in and he wanted to talk to her, that wouldn't be okay either, and after the toxic messages he sent her, nobody would assume he's a completely level-headed individual. In fact, those messages, mixed with his sneaking around her house in late hours of the night and coming to her window after being blocked, suggest he might have been a dangerous individual. What you're looking at right now is one of the many dolls made by Anatoly Moskvin, a Russian former journalist and college professor with expert knowledge of cemeteries. As a child, Anatoly began wandering through cemeteries with friends for fun, and as time went on, he developed a fascination for the dead. Decades later, this fascination led to a hobby of collecting dolls, but this hobby hit a macabre obsession that drew upon his particular interests, digging up the dead and making dolls out of their corpses. Yes, the doll you're looking at is actually made out of a dead body. After making his human dolls, he kept them in his home as his companions and possibly lovers, evident by some of the stuff he wrote about his dolls. For example, "I kissed her once, then again." But the really disturbing part of this is that the dolls were in majority made from little girls aged 3 to 12, and he would apply lipstick and makeup to many of their faces. He even marked the birthday of each of his dead victims in his bedroom. His self-proclaimed expertise on cemeteries wasn't a lie, as he was able to desecrate countless graves in his hometown while evading police for years until he was finally caught after the increasing suspicion at the growing number of defiled graves in the area. When police searched his home, they found 26 life-size dolls, or rather mummified corpses, scattered throughout the house. But the police didn't know they were corpses at first, until he openly admitted to it. His parents, who lived in the same flat as him, claimed to know nothing of his activities. His parents and others who had seen the dolls stated that they did not suspect that there were dead bodies inside, but then again, who would? Not even the police suspected the dolls to be bodies at first. His parents said they thought it was just his hobby to make such big dolls and did not see anything wrong with it. During a hearing in which he sought to be released from a psychiatric hospital to care for his elderly mother and live with a new girlfriend, he refused to apologize to his victim's parents. In his mind, he thought he was doing something good, as he stated he felt great sympathy for the dead children and thought that they could be brought back to life by either science or black magic. He even went as far as to shun the parents for leaving their daughters in the cold, whereas he took them into the warmth to be reborn. Anatoly dried the corpses using a combination of salt and baking soda, and then stored the bodies in secure, dry places in and around cemeteries. Once the bodies dried, he carried them to his home, where he used various methods to make the dolls, in an attempt to give the children functional bodies to be used when he eventually discovered a way to bring them back to life, feeling that their physical remains were too decayed and ugly for them to feel comfortable or happy. While some of the parents want Anatoly locked away behind bars for life, it was determined that he suffered a form of paranoid schizophrenia and has since been held in a psychiatric hospital. From his perspective, he may have thought he was saving a bunch of young girls, but from any other perspective, it was a horrific, downright disturbing thing to do. The picture you're looking at right now is of Amy Reeves and her baby sister. The backstory behind this picture isn't as cute and wholesome as one would imagine. On this day, Amy was taking her sister out trick-or-treating for Halloween. Amy lives in the backwoods of Texas. She moved from Houston to a small town closer to Galveston, as she described to be about an hour drive towards the southeast coast. Amy's move from the big city to a very small town was much needed for her, as she was sick of the city life, and settling into a very small home with 2 acres was a nice change of scenery for her. However, she kept noticing something completely eerie from the moment she moved into the house. It had nothing to do with the property or the home, but rather something outside the home. She kept noticing every time she would pull out of her driveway, a car would follow her and go the exact route she was going. She would ignore it and move on with her day at first, but it kept happening every single time that she would leave her house. In one of the neighboring houses, the same vehicle would pull out of their driveway whenever she would pull out of hers. She very soon started to suspect that there were some ill intentions there. However, for a while, she kept ignoring it and still moved on with her day, hoping it would stop eventually. When she was returning home from work one day, something in her gut told her to take a different route home. So she listened to her gut and took a different route. Instead of taking the highway, she took the service road towards the entrance of her little neighborhood. Instead of driving straight through the neighborhood to take a left, she took a slightly sharp right at the entrance and took a 3-minute longer route back home. But even on this detour, she eventually spotted the same vehicle in her rearview mirror. As she started to speed away to try to escape the car, it started flashing her aggressively. Eventually, she makes a left turn and the car doesn't seem to follow. She proceeded home, and just as she thought she was safe and the stalker wasn't around, she realized she was wrong. The stalker's car with the brights still on was approaching, the lights becoming brighter as it got closer. By now it was clear the stalker had been following her home, even down her new route. The man pulled into his driveway and just sat there, while Amy went into the house. While inside, she looked through the window out at the car, and the man must have taken notice, because he started revving his engine. By this point, it was clearly a full-fledged stalker harassment situation, so Amy called the police in hopes to have them go and talk to him for her. When police arrived, she explained the whole situation the best she could, noting multiple times that she just moved in and she doesn't know the man. The police went over to the man's house to talk with him. Meanwhile, Amy went to her restroom, but she was yet to be under the realization that she had left the back door unlocked when she went outside to smoke a cigarette not too long ago. While she was in the bathroom, she heard footsteps walking towards her bedroom. She got up to shut and lock the bathroom door instantly, exposing where she was to the intruder. And seconds later, there was a knock on the wall separating the bathroom and her bedroom. Even though it was fairly obvious her cover was already blown, she remained as quiet as she could. The thought that maybe it could have been one of the police officers came up in Amy's head, but after one look out the bathroom window, that idea was out the window. Outside, she could see a police officer struggling with what appeared to be damp wood from the half-rotted shed beside the stalker's house. Amy pulled up her pants, getting ready to run to the front door. And that's when she heard it again, an aggressive knock on the other side of the wall from her bedroom. The stalker was inside her bedroom, no doubt. With not many other options other than being a sitting duck, Amy opened the bathroom door and bolted for the front door and outside to try and find an officer. But there were none in sight, not even the one that was struggling with the rotted wood moments earlier, just their empty squad car. After running around looking for the officers, she returned closer to her house where there was a commotion heard from inside, and it sounded as though there was a struggle between an officer and somebody else. Amy re-entered her house to see one of the officers on her bedroom floor in a lot of pain, who looked to be struggling holding his neck, not bleeding, but bruising as if the man punched him in the throat repeatedly or strangled him. The officer never told Amy exactly what happened because his partner called an ambulance for him, but Amy was notified later that same day that the man who was stalking her was taken into custody for assaulting and fleeing from an officer. Amy never learned why the cop's partner was struggling with the wood outside, or how exactly the one officer knew to check the inside of her house. In all likelihood, by the time the police had arrived, the stalker had already let himself into her house. And when the police didn't get an answer at the stalker's house, one of them returned to Amy's house to find the door ajar, and the rest you could figure out. The picture you saw minutes earlier of Amy and her baby sister was sent to her phone only days after moving in, and it was taken by a passing car without her even knowing it. After this entire stalker incident, it became much clearer who took the picture, though Amy still doesn't know how exactly they could have gotten her phone number.